20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Tuesday, January 31st, the final day of January in 2023, which means spring is around the corner. That means draft season is like closer. The unfortunate part of that is we only have one NFL football game left this season. If you're into USFL and some XFL stuff, then more power to you. I wasn't able to fully maintain interest in that last year, but I'm going to try again because what else am I going to do? You know, the NBA doesn't really matter until what, April, May, if you're, and that depends on who your favorite team is, because you're may not matter at all. Baseball, you know, baseball in the cold stuff, all that sort of stuff. But beside the point, welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Jacob Westendorf, not joined by Jacob Morley tonight. He's trying to spend less money at Target, which more power to him for that. Godspeed, Mr. Stack. And joined now by the godfather of Packer Report, Bison Report, and anything basically with the word report behind it, I think he runs. And that is Ross Uglum. Ross, how are we doing?
We're spectacular.
Spectacular is better than...
Yeah, we'd be better if Cordell Volson was in the Super Bowl, but he's, you know, we're fine.
Be better if Christian Watson was in the Super Bowl. Yes. I mean, that was that would have been much nicer, but Championship Sunday, a bit of a dud. The Chiefs and Bengals game was good, marred by some controversial officiating, I guess is what we'll call it, at the end of that particular game. Eagles 49ers, that game was over the minute Brock Purdy's elbow snapped. I know the score was 7-7 at one point after Purdy got hurt, but there was just no feasible way that the 49ers, like if the Eagles scored 10 points, like you're basically saying, can Jalen Hurts, Devontae Smith, and AJ Brown and that entire crew get them a field goal? Because there's just the Niners, I don't care who your head coach is. I don't care what your plan is. I don't care what your schematics are. I had a chuckle yesterday as I was reading through and everyone's like, oh, I expected more creativity from the 49ers. And I'm just kind of like, what do you, I'm all for making jokes about Kyle Shanahan and especially at his expense, but what do you want him to do? Like the quarterback can't lift his arm. He can't, there's no threat of throwing the football. You can't run double reverse passes on every single play. Like it's essentially a team trying to run the triple option, but you can't really do that either because Purdy's elbow is jacked. So you can't risk that getting hit and getting hurt. And come to find out, he's going to have UCL surgery.
He's got the Tommy John injury.
Yeah, so he's out for 6 months. I have no idea who the hell is going to play quarterback for the 49ers next year between injury, surgeries, free agents, everything else. But
I mean, Trey Lance is still on contract.
But he's coming off what? He's had two surgeries.
It's an ankle. It's an ankle. It's different.
But it is.
I
would go back to Trey Lance. I think they're going to go after Tom Brady. That just seems to be the convention. That's not a hot take or anything. That seems to be conventional wisdom. Now, as the 49ers might go chasing that direction, we'll see if that is what happens. But yeah, there was nothing like the 49ers eventually got to a point where they brought a plastic spoon to a bazooka fight. Like they didn't have anything. And I don't care how many weapons you have. If the quarterback can't lift his arm, I mean, Ross, how many times the last play?
I thought they were going to get killed either way, but that's maybe besides the point.
I thought the Eagles were going to win as well, but I think that obviously, you know, when you can't, for example, like the play I was coming up with, the Deebo Samuel toss where they run like that toss and it's just basically like Deebo find the hole and pick up yards. Like how many times have we seen that play go for 6, 7, 8, 10 yard, you know, whatever, because right. Deebo's that gifted of a runner. But yesterday when they ran that play, it goes for -4 because as soon as the ball is snapped, Avante Maddox and the Eagles linebackers are able to just kind of rush their gaps because there's no threat of them throwing the football. So that's kind of the nature that they went in. Ross, you said you thought the Niners were going to get killed either way. Any surprises, anything that happened yesterday that was like out of the norm?
No, I mean, I will say this, and I said it live. I don't know if I tweeted it or just said it in the group chat, and I suppose if it's in the group chat doesn't really count. But I did say to the guys I was talking to, like I would have just probably, not probably, I would have just removed a quarterback, period. had Debo play quarterback, had McCaffrey play quarterback, whatever, because it got very obvious very quickly that the Eagles were onto it. So why not run some stuff where at least the person, you're plus one in the run game, right? You're quarter, because Purdy handing off is not a threat. They're not respecting the bootleg. There's no respect. So at least if you're snapping the ball to Debo, and I'm not saying that that's like a great way to run your offense, but when you throw Brock Purdy out there, you just admit like we're not going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and that was odd.
If I was a 49ers fan, I would probably have the grace to understand that it just wasn't our day, but I would also be frustrated. Like this plan was never getting us back from 21-7 ever. Yeah. Ever.
No. And it felt like, I don't want to call it karma or anything like that, but like, you're not supposed to win seven games in a row when your third string quarterback is playing for you. So it almost felt like all of the, you know, the good that they did over those 7 weeks or something went the complete opposite direction in the span of about 25 minutes. Cause it was Purdy's, I think, second pass of the game where his elbow got hit and became a fumble and going from there. The only other thing from that game that was interesting, I guess, and I don't know if you want a potential turning point, was the Devontae Smith one-handed catch, not catch, that wasn't able to be overturned by the eye in the sky. And then kudos to the Eagles for getting up to the line of scrimmage and running a play. Shanahan didn't challenge for whatever reason that was. Maybe he didn't get a good look at it from his guys upstairs. I don't know. But the Chiefs and the Bengals game, Ross, the Bengals felt like you can't really call it an upset, but a trendy pick. I picked them myself. But once it got to, I think it was like Bengals -2.5 at one point, I'm like, I know the jokes about Burrowhead and everything like that. Travis Kelce certainly made his feelings known about that at the end of the game. But it almost, I hate the term disrespect or anything like that, but like Patrick Mahomes at Arrowhead Stadium was a 2.5-point underdog. Like there is some at least legitimacy to the claim of disrespect when you get to something like that, isn't there?
Well, especially when Cincinnati's offensive line was in the shambles that it was in. When all you have left is Ted Karras and Cordell Volson, that's not great. and I love Cordell, obviously, but he's a fifth round pick, you know, rookie. And I thought he played pretty well, but you got Jack Carman at left tackle. That's not great. You've got Hakeem Adeniji at right tackle. That's also not great. They're just not. If you give me two out of the three, or even just give me Jonah Williams back, maybe I feel different. Although you can line Chris Jones up wherever the hell you want, as we found out. But yeah, that was tough because it was like, well, yes, I think even at Arrowhead, if everyone's at full strength, Cincinnati's better. You know, Burrow, I think, is on the as blasphemous as this may sound, I think Burrow's on the same level as Pat. And Cincinnati just has better weapons. Mixon. Like, I all due respect to Kelce, but Mixon. Chase, Boyd, who got hurt, Higgins, that's a jump ball guy, you know, they just have more dudes than I think Kansas City does. But the matchup problem was you can't block Frank Clark and Chris Jones with three backups. And that matchup problem existed when they were setting the line. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of my only take on that, I guess.
Yeah, once all that, I mean, it kind of goes the way that it should have, right? Burrow and Mahomes, similar level quarterback. 3 points is what's typically given for home field advantage, and that's what Kansas City won by. Just real quick before we do in the Packers stuff, Ross, really, really early take on Super Bowl 57, Eagles and Chiefs. Who do you think's better? Who do you think wins if you've gotten that far, all that stuff?
I tell you, I would lean Eagles. I'm leaning pretty hard Eagles if I don't hear if I don't hear at some point that the Chiefs got significantly healthier. They lost dude after dude after dude from that crew, and a lot of them were good players. And I head to head, especially with, I like Kansas City's defense, but I don't love it. And Part of it could be like Joe Barry related PTSD, but I thought Philly was going to kill the Niners because that offense is defense proof. Like I don't know. And of course they lost games. I get that. They're not undefeated, but I don't think Mahomes is going to be able to move fully in 2 weeks. He'll look better, but Philly has guys after guys after, I mean, they're bringing the Ndamukong Suh off the bench, man. Like they're, yeah. they got guys after guys, after guys that can come at the quarterback. And I just think, man, if Philly gets ahead, which I think they will, because of Hurts, because of Brown, because of Devontae, because of Sanders, because of Goddard, if they get ahead, I just think Pat's in trouble. I think Pat's in trouble. I think Philly's favored for a reason. I would bet on Philly if I were a gambling type of person.
Yeah, and I think that they are. You mentioned if they get ahead, not only is Pat in trouble, but I think this offensive line is the best in football, and they can lean on Kansas City's defense if it comes down to that. Something about, now granted, they did a good job against Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine, which isn't a running game to sneeze at, but the Eagles have that added dimension of Jalen Hurts.
And it's easier to sneeze at the guys blocking. And no disrespect to Cordell, but like this Eagles team isn't missing linemen.
No.
And by the way, all due respect to Chris Jones wants to rush the passer. Frank Clark really wants to rush the passer. Like Frank Clark is not an enormous dude. If we're talking about like how you would design a run defender on the edge, he would not look like Frank Clark, who is 6'3", and I think that's pushing it, 270. And he's not a small guy, but he's 6'2.5". Like I would like more length than that, you know? Anyway, that's kind of my deal. It's like, they're both, I'll put it to you this way. Both teams are built to play from ahead because both defenses, I think, are built around their pass rush. And
they are. Yeah.
I believe that Philly is more likely to get ahead.
Yeah, that feels that way to me as well. I just think that, not just that, but you know, the talk of Super Bowl experience and everything like that, I would have to look to be 100% sure, but it might be about even. Kansas City's had quite a bit of turnover on that team since they played in the Super Bowl against Tampa a couple years ago. Philadelphia's got guys on their team that are still there from that 2017 group. I don't think that's going to be that big of a deal. And if you want a historical nugget, may not matter, it may matter. The Eagles have the number one pass defense in the NFL, and they are facing off against the number one passing offense in the NFL. Such matchup has happened two other times. Peyton Manning against Seattle did not go well. Rich Gannon against Tampa Bay did not go well. So Eileen Birds as well. So we've done enough time on not Packer stuff. Let's do some Packer stuff. Ross, unfortunately, this is, since we've been doing these shows together, this is normally the time that we're talking about the Packers having been eliminated and having their season end. And
just as painful. Yeah. Just as painful.
It's not fun. But you know, we've had a little more time is what that means to, I don't know about your process, but I typically do, you know, what do I see live? What do I see on TV? Maybe catch a little bit more study here or there in terms of draft prospects. And then whenever the Packers season ends, that is when I start really full deep diving in. Well, we've had a little more time to do that now because it's been 22 days since the Packers' last game of the season. So we wanted to plant a couple of flags. So I wanted to see if you had a flag that you wanted to plant here and kind of steer that direction.
I'll do three. You don't have to follow me, but I'm gonna plant my flag on a guy that I'd like to see at 15. I'm going to plant my flag on a guy that I think is, you know, a mid-round guy that maybe I think should be a second-round guy. And I'm not that deep into it, but I'm gonna stand on somebody and really, you know, kind of wave, like I said, wave the flag and say this is my guy. Other than that, and then I'll give you a late rounder, and no one will be surprised by the late rounder. I'll just say that.
Okay, so we'll go that route. Let's go ahead and plant your first flag there on who's your guy at 15 then.
So my Brian Burns, Christian Watson, write it on a post-it note like I'm Kevin Costner guy is the slot corner from Alabama Branch. He is so much about okay, I'll put it to you this way. What if Adrian Amos could play slot corner at a high level? And I mean like prime Adrian Amos, like the one that they drafted or the one that they signed and the one that they got right away. And I'm not saying Adrian's washed. It just hasn't been what it used to be. That's where I'm at with Brian Branch, who's lifted as a safety. But my man, over the course of, I don't know, 768 plus, we'll call it 1600-ish snaps in college. He missed four tackles. Over 3 years, he missed four tackles. Like, my guy just doesn't miss tackles. And that is so incredibly valuable. I think as a slot area defender, as a box safety, if they need him, I don't know that I want him running around there as a free safety. But as one of your best 11 and as a guy that I think would really stress teams that want to run the ball out of three and four wide sets, which, by the way, is a lot of teams, including the Eagles. The Eagles want to put you in 11 personnel and stress your slot area defenders, stress your edge defenders, etc. Brian Branch is the answer to that. Brian Branch will get you on the ground. Tons and tons of splash plays. No, not necessarily. I think he's got two picks in his career, 9 PBUs, but my God, man, you just don't get by him. You just don't get by him. And he's good, in coverage. But man, like I said, that his ability to shed blocks at his size, his ability to get guys on the ground, his ability to cover, like I said, it's like if Adrian Amos could play a legitimate nickel. That's where I'm at with Brian Branch.
And I'll go in a similar light for early here. I do like Branch. I wonder, he might end up being somebody that I wonder if he gets raised up the board just because there aren't that many guys, or does he kind of drop a little bit throughout this process? And we'll see what happens. Obviously, a lot of things are going to change between now and April 28th or whatever day that that's
slightly weird and like a Isaiah Simmons, Derwin James, Hassan Reddick type of way too, where it's like, okay, where do I play? Where does he play? What do we do with him? And I hope that it doesn't take that long for somebody to figure out.
Yeah. And remains to be seen. Green Bay, another piece of news that was covered, but just feels like mentioning, Green Bay's looking for a new defensive backs coach. Jerry Gray will not return next season. He's headed to Atlanta. My guy earlier on is another defensive back, like you were talking about. Devon Weatherspoon from Illinois is one of those guys for me. You want to talk about inside outside versatility? He's a 6 foot player, but I think he's oily and I think he's physical. I think he's a guy that you could plug in as a slot corner. You know, Green Bay has it's a good problem to have, but it's one that we've talked about a lot. Is they've got, you know, Jair Alexander, Eric Stokes, Rasul Douglas. All three of those guys are boundary corners. They don't have. Darnell Savage right now is probably their best suited player to play nickel, but is he going to be on the team next year? I would venture to say yes. I don't know. I don't say that with some conviction. And he might stink. Like, that might be the other part of it. I think having somebody in there that drafting a guy like this does something twofold. Number one, it guarantees Darnell Savage nothing, which is probably a good thing. And it doesn't guarantee the rookie anything either, which the Packers have typically liked to do, especially under Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur. They've tend to lean veteran, especially early, sometimes to a detriment. Hello, Royce Newman, Jake Hansen, et cetera, going that direction. But that's a guy to me who you want to talk about. You were talking about guys missing tackles and stuff. This is a guy who he's physical. He's got an attitude. I think the Packers need a little bit more on the defensive side of the ball. Peter Bukowski called it FU energy I'm going to call it like small man syndrome. He's not small by any stretch as a 6 foot player, but just that like ability of, what was it? Mike Hilton said during the Bills game, something like, I'm going to put all 185 pounds on him or something like that. I think that's something that Green Bay could certainly use. I think he could play the boundary in a pinch, and I think he's a plug and play type of slot corner, which you're talking about. Yeah, Adrian Amos, if Amos could play the slot, I think he's a little bit better in coverage and a little bit less as like some of the stuff that Amos is good at. But that's my take on that. So let's go a mid-round guy, or, you know, kind of after the first round, somebody that you want to plan on.
It's crazy because I'm gonna do like a diet or a poor man's, certainly not a homeless man's, and barely even a poor man's, but everybody's obsessed right now with Lucas Van Ness, and that's fine. I get that for sure. But my poor man's version of Lucas, and a guy that I really like, I don't know where he plays in Green Bay. I mean, I think I do, but it's your guy, Jake, Mike Morris. I really like Mike Morris. he's a weirdo. I don't think you can play him where you would play like Dean Lowry. And I also don't know if you would put him on the edge at 6'6", 292. But if they had a more – and that's the other scary thing. If they had a more, like, interesting defensive coordinator, I'd love it even more. But I just think – I think Mike Morris is going to have success at the next level. He had 37 pressures, man, this season on a defense that was obviously missing David Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson. And I like him. and I can't, I think he's going to test kind of like a freak too. The only thing I'm wondering is agility, but from tape, I think his explosive numbers are going to be sweet.
Yeah. And he's a guy who, like you mentioned, they at Michigan this year had to replace a lot of guys. They called it the no star defense, but he was kind of their star. And it was noticeable, you know, when he missed the last two games of the year against Illinois, who didn't really try and throw the ball, at Ohio State, who throws the ball a bunch. Michigan didn't have much of a pass rush against Ohio State. And that kind of showed up. They got some late, but Morris is one of their best players. The guy I'm going to go with, it, it's kind of a popular pick, but he right now to me is the best tight end in this class. That's Dalton Kincaid from Utah. I think obviously he's a little bit older. I think he's going to be 24. So that might be something that maybe Green Bay won't care on the second day. Maybe they don't care on the first day anymore. I guess they took DeVonte Wyatt. I think he turns 30 here in March.
I think until these COVID kids are all through, nobody can care anymore. Like, it just has to be part of the.
Yeah. Stetson Bennett is what, 33 years old or something like that. So, I mean, there's, yeah, I think that what I'm trying to think, I think with the COVID year and like medical redshirts, you can end up being in it's like the Chris Farley from Tommy Boy thing. A lot of guys go to college for 7 years. Like, that's something that can actually happen now with the
COVID. Oh, for years. Sure. No, you redshirt, you get your COVID year, and something bad happens once. You know, you medically redshirt one time, and absolutely you can play 7 years in college.
And it's just something Green Bay, I think, you know, yesterday my guy Joe Arrigo floated the idea of Green Bay potentially getting Aaron Rodgers to Las Vegas for two firsts and Darren Waller. Speculation on his part, he admitted as much, but Darren Waller is a guy that Green Bay has targeted before. You know, I don't mind the idea of Green Bay getting a veteran tight end, and that doesn't have to mean Darren Waller. That can mean bringing back Bob Tonyan on a one-year contract if you miss on something a little higher end like Waller might be. But adding a guy like Kincaid and then grabbing another dude on day three to kind of be replace your Tyler Davis's, or maybe it's Mercedes Lewis. You know, Ross, I remember famously when we were doing From the Benches, you said something along the lines of, you know, sometimes the best nose tackle in the league is a sixth round pick from who gives a damn state or something like that. And that's kind of how some of these blocking tight ends can be. Now, yeah, Mercedes Lewis, sure, obviously a first round pick, but that is kind of dumb luck on that stance. But, you know, the Packers could easily grab a blocking guy on day three. But Kincaid is somebody I like him more than Michael Mayer. And maybe that's just overkill from the draft process. Admittedly, it's early on that way. Darnell Washington is a guy who, I will say this and take this for what it's worth, I do not think the Packers are going to draft him. And it's for similar reasons to that they would not draft George Pickens. Again, take that for what it is. Maybe I will be wrong. Maybe some of that stuff will be alleviated, but there are some things that are going to be interesting to them. And the Packers might do a ton of homework on something like that. But Kincaid's a guy to me, he's able to stretch the seam in a way the Packers, like, they just don't have anybody that can do that under contract. They don't have tight ends, period, under contract right now. But even when Tonyan is under contract, they're going to need a guy who's going to be his replacement. You know, if, even if Bob is back in 2023, it seems unlikely that he's getting another contract after next year from the Green Bay Packers. So you want to pick the top guy. You know, last year was a big fan of Trey McBride in the draft. Thought maybe Green Bay might target him if they had kept both of their second round picks. That turned out okay with the one guy they did draft in the second round. You guys might have heard that on the show once or twice about the kid that they drafted there. I'll leave that to another time. But somebody that I think Green Bay, it's a position they haven't really neglected it. They've just not been successful. They've spent free agent money on older guys. That has not worked. And they've drafted guys. They drafted Jay Sternberger with a top 75 pick. It just didn't work out. And that's the way. And Josiah DeGuara was a top 100 pick. That can't really be thrown into a tight end bucket. But right now, I think the best tight end in the class is Kincaid. That's somebody that if they picked him at what is it, 45, I think is their second round pick. That is a run the card up type of situation potentially. Ross, let's go to your, you know, mid to, I guess, mid guy and then your late round guy that nobody will be surprised by.
My mid guy was the Michigan dude.
Okay, so your late round guy, that's right. So, yeah. Mike Morris, we went through that.
From Spencer, Wisconsin, from North Dakota State University, fullback Hunter Lipke. Hunter is a crazy story. Went to or played co-op ball with Spencer in Columbus Catholic High School in Marshfield, Wisconsin. 4,452 rushing yards and 82 touchdowns in high school, not offered by the Badgers, which ended up being a colossal mistake. Hunter has, for PFF's purposes, been the second, first, and first graded fullback in college football over the last three seasons. He was the MVP of the national championship game 2 years ago. But the reason I like him is because I think he's going to test really well, and he has body control that you can't teach. Hunter catches the ball extremely naturally. I would encourage folks to turn on the tape when they played the Pac-12 Arizona. I understand that Arizona is not a world beater. I think they went 5-7 this year. But those are Pac-12 athletes, and Hunter, like I said, just catches the football in a very natural way. The absolute lockstep 100% comp that people will make is Juszczyk, and Juszczyk has repeatedly shouted out Hunter on social media as a player that he loves. And I'm not saying that you should give that an ounce of thought as from a scouting perspective that Kyle Juszczyk likes Hunter or thinks that he can play well, but at 6'1", 236, he's played a ton of F tight end. He's played some H back for NDSU. He's played a ton of tailback, but has played fullback, somebody you can use in short yardage. Somebody that they ran kind of this vertical toss play for, but extremely comfortable with the football in his hands. He blocks. Look, like he does the things that a fullback does. I understand all of that. But he also has 1,600 career rushing yards and 24 touchdowns. He also has 38 catches and 9 touchdowns through the air. This is a human being that's very, very good at a lot of things. Football related, and because he might not be a super obvious positional fit, I think he's going to probably go in round 5 or 6 or 7. And I think he is everything that Matt LaFleur wanted Josiah DeGuara to be.
Yeah, and that was my point that I was going to make is maybe, you know, not something that you want to spend the top 100 pick on, especially with some of the things that Green Bay needs to add to their roster, but they have 87 seventh round picks or something to that effect. And Josiah DeGuara is entering a contract season. You know, that's something that it's wild how fast this has gone. And we've spent so much time talking about Jordan Love and his fifth year option, but like AJ Dillon, Josiah DeGuara, John Runyon, we talked about him at the top. You know, that's something that these are guys that could be entering their final season in Green Bay. And that's something I'm not saying the Packers need to draft someone like that for DeGuara, but you mentioned Lepke here, then that's somebody that could potentially just and honestly, like
yeah, replace too, him at 6'1", 236. He will go down and murder people on special teams. That's just facts. I've watched him do it. He'll continue to do it. He will help that third phase. You're going to take a guy like Tariq Carpenter, take a guy like Hunter Lipke.
And that's something that I think Green Bay could stand to do because You know, are they going to bring back all of the Rudy Fords, the Dallin Lovitz, the Eric Wilsons? Are they going to bring back all of those guys? That feels unlikely.
Seems difficult.
I would guess that they'll bring, I mean, unless they're just going to be vet minimum guys, then I'm going to guess that those are guys that they're able, at least one of them is going to end up somewhere else. So that's something where, again, last year, I mean, you saw it right away. It was funny that like the Jonathan Ford pick, everybody was like, oh, he was drafted to be a field goal protection player. Tariq Carpenter was a guy who actually kind of flashed, did some nice things at the end of the year. That feels like a guy who can, you know, can he replace Dallin Levitt or something? And he's a little more physically gifted than Levitt might be, but it remains to be seen how that'll go. But that's something that those
guys that kid's more physically gifted than a lot of people. I just
don't know how to play football. Yeah, that's part of it too. My late round guy that I'll give is, since we're doing homers and picks, I'll go Aluelo with Timmy. Somebody that he's a center only. He played for 4 years at Virginia, played this past year at Michigan. I was talking with Tyler Brook today about him. I do worry a little bit about his strength, which sounds strange considering he played at Michigan, who's kind of thought of as this team that just wants to beat you by brute force. And they did that to pretty much everybody except for TCU this past season. But he's somebody, if you watch the way the Packers have kind of wanted Josh Myers to do things where they snap the ball and they're running with this pulling center. Oluwatimi was absolutely incredible at that throughout the course of the season. He's able to climb to the second level. I'm not saying he's like as gifted athletically as like someone like Jason Kelce. Jason Kelce is one of the best centers in all of football. But if you watch the way that like some of the things the Eagles ask Kelce to do, and part of the reason their running game, Ross, like you mentioned earlier, is as good as it is because of Kelce's ability to move like that. Josh Myers is good at that kind of stuff, but he's just not consistent enough at that spot. And I was talking with somebody earlier today saying, like, I think Josh Myers is going to be the starting center next season. And maybe he should, but I don't think that's somebody that should be guaranteed anything. You know, if Green Bay came back next year with Bakhtiari and Nyman, I would be giving Zach Tom competitive reps at center with Myers. Like, and maybe not just him. In this case, you know, it'd be him and Oluwatimi, or if they draft another guy, you know, they'll probably draft an offensive lineman who played left tackle that also maybe can play center a little bit. And that's something they could do. But I think just the way that Green Bay likes to have those guys move, I think that's something they could do. And frankly, like, maybe Myers is just better suited of having to play at guard, not having to worry about snapping and stepping at the same time. That is a difficult thing to do, especially with some of these twitched up, freaky defensive tackles that these guys are asked to block. And some of the things the Packers ask their centers to do is frankly pretty difficult. So that's something they can do there. Ross, we are running short on time. Is there anything else you want to add real quick? Maybe another guy or something you want to throw out there before we go into Super Bowl week?
No, I'm all good. I got my flags planted. It's early in the process. Feel good about them.
Yeah. And I feel good about mine as well. So we'll see how they go. I can promise you guys, as you've heard probably on the show a couple times, if the Packers draft a kid from North Dakota State, we will talk about him a little bit.
Here's the thing. You just called me a homer too. You said, okay, we're doing homerism. Was I wrong
about Watson? No.
Okay.
No, I think I saw, I don't remember the exact stat or like what all went with it, but like, they're like, oh, Christian Watson and something about target share. I don't remember exactly what it was, but in the rookie season, and the other guys on the list are like Odell Beckham, Justin Jefferson, Randy Moss. Like, I think there was a joke you made a while back. Like, that's not the Packers Hall of Fame. That's the regular Hall of Fame. Yeah. So anyways, we'll talk about those guys a little bit. That'll be fun. Hopefully, hey, if the Packers are going to draft kids from North Dakota State and they're going to turn out to be in the same sentence as players like that, then I'm not going to argue one bit with how that's going to go. But we're out of time. We'll be back next week, which is, unfortunately, this is the week there is no football this weekend. So if somebody wants to send me survival tips or remind me what the hell I'm supposed to do on Saturdays and Sundays now, I frankly don't remember. College basketball is a tough watch if you're a Wisconsin Badger fan this year. And they're kind of hard to watch even when they're really good sometimes. So that makes things difficult. The USFL and the XFL don't start. The Senior Bowl is this week. The East-West Shrine Game, shout out Owen Reese, is this Thursday. So that'll be fun if you guys want to check in to that stuff. But you can follow me. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow the show at Packaday Podcast. Like, rate, subscribe, view, all that good stuff. And you can follow Ross. He's at Ross Uglum. We'll be back next week. Hopefully Morley joins us. We'll see. Otherwise, if he hasn't, you can assume that he's in some trouble for having spent too much money at Target, like I mentioned earlier. So thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next week.